Today's edition of the College Football Inquirer, we're going to talk Red River Shootout. We're going to talk Alabama and A&M and why Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher aren't fighting over NIL anymore. We got Fat Bear Week. We got games to pick. And we got all sorts of stuff that probably will not, I can't possibly imagine we're going to talk about right now, but that's the fun of the show. Stay tuned.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
The Big Ten West is so freaking bad that Iowa, the national punchline, could legitimately end up 11-1.
Russ Dellinger.
God, who would have thought before the season that LSU would have only been a 5.5-point favorite at Missouri?
And SI's Pat Forty.
Keep your duck home. Your duck does not belong at the football game. You can make it through 3 hours of the football game without the emotional support of your duck. Keep your duck off the airplane as well.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And talk a lot about Oklahoma, Texas. We're going to talk a lot about it later when we do our race for the case. Hear my preamble. How accurate do you think my preamble will be, gentlemen?
Not very.
I taped it before. Not Ross, not good.
No, you know we're not going to cover all that. No.
Here's the usual show dynamic is no planning, a little bit of planning, and then the little bit of planning just disappears about 5 minutes in.
Yeah.
And we go all over the place.
That's true. That's true. Well, this is my plan. I did a little planning. I did a little planning because I looked up a couple quotes.
Oh. Okay.
Alabama is traveling to College Station this weekend. Big game for both programs, for the SEC West race, potentially for the playoff. Both have a loss, but I assume if you could get to Atlanta and beat Georgia, that can be wiped out. This is the SEC. Committee loves the SEC, even this year. Kirby Smart thinks every SEC team should be ranked.
Yeah, that was a gem.
Mm. Yeah, thanks. That's glad you're paying attention. Kirby from Athens calls into the Fine Bomb show. Is that what that is? Like,
ball.
Why aren't we all ranked? That leaves 11 spots for the rest of the country. Isn't that enough?
I'll see how Michigan could actually win an SEC football game. They'd be 2 points. Be two touchdown dogs at Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt lost at UNLV, but they just weren't ready for that game.
They were the. But it's a big game. But if you remember, this was supposed to be the modern day grudge match, right? 16 months ago, Nick Saban was at some kind of function in Birmingham, talking freely with a microphone. Dangerous. There was no Diet Coke in front of him. And he was just rambling on, and he said, NIL came up, and he said, we were second in recruiting last year. And you could tell that angered him. I thought they don't watch the rankings. I thought they don't look at the see what rivals thinks. We just pick our own guys.
Just like they don't read the papers or read social media. And then they quote it.
Saban does. Rat poison. Anyway, we were second in recruiting last year, Saban said. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team. Made a deal for name, image, and likeness. We didn't buy one player. But I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it. Well, this got to Coach Fisher down there in College Station, and he just flipped. What do they say? Like an old man sending soup back. I'm using a lot of signs.
Soup back. Like an old man sending soup back at a deli.
Yes. It's a shame that we have to do this, Jimbo said. It's really despicable. It's despicable that someone can say something about somebody. More importantly, 17-year-old kids. You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families that they broke state laws. It's despicable that a reputable head coach can come out and say this when he doesn't get his way or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen. It's ridiculous when he's not on top. Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You might find out about a guy a lot of things you don't want to know. We build him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past or anybody who's ever coached with him. You can find out anything you want to know about what he does and how he does it. It's despicable. I mean, that was some great stuff.
Oh, yeah. I remember hearing they tried to get, you know, Jimbo, I guess, saw the quotes or heard about the quotes, and he was like, I'm having a presser. We're going. Mm. And they kind of like were like, no, coach, like, I don't think this is needed. Like, no. You know, and he was going to have that presser, and boy, did he.
Oh, I'm sure AC down there was trying to hold it back, but I tell them West Virginia boys start hollering at each other. You can't stop it. You can hear guys arguing like this every day at the service station down there in Monaga.
Beckley.
What was it? Is it Monaga? Monaga, wherever Saban's from?
Monaga.
That service station down at the junction of 218 and US 19 where my dad worked every day. Anyway, we were supposed to have this big fight, but they kissed and made up or something. I don't know what happened. Jimbo, I probably realized this was not really the best idea because he may have one number one recruiting class, but Alabama has all the others. Anyway, this is what's interesting. This was a massive story and a huge fight, and it was a Saban screaming that the world was changing and he didn't like it, and A&M and all that. Okay. About 2 weeks ago, Ross, you were there. Gene Smith of Ohio State, the AD, comes out and says that recruits are now asking for $5,000 just to visit a school. So presumably they're asking Ohio State for $5,000 to come to Columbus for an unofficial visit or an official visit. I don't know, some visit. Now, unofficial, you got to pay your own way. So maybe that's just covering it. Or Ohio State's paying it. I don't know if they're paying it or not. Now, this isn't really all that new either. I remember being at a school one day. I saw an AAU basketball coach in Detroit at this school. It was a Big Ten school. It was not close by. And he had driven like three guys down there. And I'm like, man, that's a heck of an effort for you to come all the way down here. Like, it's a long drive. He's like, oh, they gave me $1,000 to do it. You know, like,
I'm making like, for a while.
Yeah, it's like I'm making about $750 today just driving these kids over here. So it's like, okay, so this is not new either.
That's been the economy in basketball, certainly for decades. Yeah.
You want your kid, you want some kids on campus, AAU coach is driving them, or somebody's driving, high school coach. Someone's driving, someone's paying for that gas money, maybe a hotel room, maybe a little lunch, maybe a little something for the effort. Who cares, right? Like, I get it's against the rules, but it's like if a guy takes three kids to a college campus to look around and they, like, are motivated to attend college, like, I think that's like we'd build a statue for that guy. Spends his weekends taking kids from the inner city to colleges. And, you know, I mean, what are we doing? Anyway, that's the rule. Gene Smith wasn't really complaining, just bringing it up. So then they asked Saban about that. And this is the tone difference from how pissed he was 16 months ago. Maybe this is because it's more, I don't know, wasn't as direct. But he said he did not know of these $5,000 offers. Not that I know of. I don't know anybody that's asked us for that. And I got to say, God bless the person that would have the courage to do that, right to Nick Saban.
You don't know. You don't do it to Saban. You do it to the 14th guy down the line.
Right. Hey, a little something.
That's right. Some analyst or something.
Yeah. A little something for the effort.
Player personnel director.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, but look, name, image, and likeness is not really name, image, and likeness. True. I think we all understand what it's become and what we allowed it to become. I said long ago and got very criticized for it, is this what we want college football to become? So it's becoming what it's becoming, and that's okay. I mean, we're just adapting to what we have to do to be able to compete, whatever the circumstances are. And he goes on, so he'd love guardrails, but whatever. This was a massive tone change. What we're supposed to have is this fight over old school, new school, NIL, who's buying players, who isn't. Instead, 16 months later, in what was supposed to be this fiery feud, it's, we're just dealing with it. Which is always my point on why we don't need any guardrails or they're wasting all their time, is everyone will figure it out. Nothing bad's happening. They'll all adjust and figure it out. That's basically what Saban's saying. At the same time, we had this week two interesting stories. One, Utah players all got a truck. What is it? What was it? A rant? What was the truck?
Yeah. Dodge Ram Big Horn 1500 truck with night edition vision, whatever.
I mean, it looked badass in the video.
And like a faulty college football football diagram on the side.
Advertising wrap around it, which had an accurate depiction of a drawn up play.
Yeah, right. The play where like the X's should have been the O's and the O's should have been the X's.
Yeah. Well, so somebody tweeted me. Sorry, somebody zoomed in on the X's and O's picture and tweeted me and said, "Is this why? Is this the plays that Utah is using on offense? Because that's what it looks like on the field."
What if it was the Iowa offense? Just punt formation.
That's it.
Right, we lined up a punt. This is our punt formation. X and O. Yeah, you got to drive around a little bit of a clown car. But everyone gets, I mean, it's pretty good. Pretty cool. Sure. And it's the change of the economy. It used to be coaches all got cars. Now the players get cars because they look and go, actually rather have, I'll sell more trucks if the players are driving it around than I will if the coach. I don't know. How many people are buying a truck? Because like, man, Kyle Whittingham looks good. At the same time,
I guarantee Kyle Whittingham drives a truck.
Kyle Whittingham is a truck driving coach.
For sure. For sure. A guy that hasn't, I don't think he's gone like, hadn't he gone a certain amount of days consecutive working out in the gym? Like, I think it's like 2 or 3 years straight.
I think it's like 70 years. Like in the womb, the guy push up. Yeah. No, that's a guy's got his, he's one of those guys. Like, I want to be Coach Whittingham when I grow up. This guy's got his business together. Now, at the same time, Michigan State, they had this collective called Spartan Dogs for Life, and they canceled or paused nearly all of their contracts with the Michigan State football players because they don't have enough money. We cannot sustain a model that is only funded by a few individuals who deserve our appreciation for supporting Spartan Dogs for Life for two full seasons. Spartan Nation, it's up to you. So they're kind of like, they need the money, and it's almost the bottom of the market kind of dropping out, that there isn't this endless supply. Clearly, Spartan Dogs for Life is not for life. It's Spartan Dogs for 2 years, maybe.
Spartan Dogs for as long as the money lasts.
Unless Matt Ishbia gets distracted by buying the Phoenix Suns. But that's not really a catchy term. So 16 months later, we have, like, I don't know. I don't know how all these stories are related, but I find them all interesting. In some ways, the market's going up. In some ways, the market's going down. In some ways, Saban is just like, we'll be fine. Same way, hey, do we want college football to be an open, air raid offense? Okay, we'll just do it. Jimbo, I don't know if he's still claiming he's never given anyone a NIL deal or something. I don't know. Who knows? But they're going
up. Not a dom.
Pat, does any of these four stories, any of this part that stood out to me, does it make any, can you tell me why they all seem related in my mind, but probably aren't?
Well, I mean, it's the ongoing evolution of the NIL space, right? In a lot of different ways. Outrage, okay, maybe the outrage is going to dissipate. So, collectives that are getting smarter, collectives that are getting poorer, kind of a leveling of things, a dust settling, which we've been saying for years would probably be the case, that this is not going to lead to outright ruination. It's going to lead to a settling of the marketplace in a manner that it works as well as each school can make it work. And it's going to be better for some and worse for others. A couple of things there. The A&M thing, like, for one, Saban could be a lot more chill about A&M because guess what? They aren't very good. Like, okay, last year they were 5-7. This year, maybe they're okay. Maybe they could still win the SEC West. Their one loss is a non-conference loss. But I don't think anybody is looking at Texas A&M right now and saying, oh, they're going to the playoff. Look out. So there's a little less threat there. Alabama has probably figured out how to deal in the NIL and collective space with the Texas A&Ms of the world. And I do wonder exactly how effective the A&M collective has been. The 12th Man Foundation, whatever else they got going on down there. They brought in a lot of players. Some of them left. Some stayed. Some have been good. Some getting better. Has it been an absolute game changer? Not yet. We'll see. So, predictably, a lot of the panic was premature, overly loud, overly paid attention to. And everything's going to find its way to the, to water will find its level. Your collective will find its level. Maybe it helps your team. Hopefully it does, but maybe it doesn't. That's the way it goes.
You know, you look back on it, what A&M did the first year of NIL to incite the anger from a one Nick Saban was get ahead of everybody. And they just did it early. You know, they were just out in front. They were well organized. The donors were, and they were doing things that others were not. I think a lot of schools and school donor bases weren't, especially early on, as organized, right, and weren't as prepared. And A&M was, and everybody just caught up, right? When you do something, everybody's going to catch up and follow you, mimic you. And that's kind of what's happened. And as Pat said about the kind of like the eventual leveling of the field where everybody to an extent is doing the same thing, or at least at the top of college football. And that's kind of what we're seeing now. You know, I think we're seeing somewhat of a plateauing of this industry. It just took a couple years and things kind of settled down a little bit.
All right.
And that's what happened. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. The heat is off. No one's talking NIL going into this. And that seemed almost impossible to fathom 16 months ago. Felt like the start.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly when he's sitting there saying, check how God did things.
Well, and that was, again, a classic coach feud, though. Like, yeah. I'm going to point my finger and say that dude's dirty, but I'm sure not hell saying how he's dirty.
Yeah. Then you got a microphone, Jimbo. Say, go ahead. Yeah. Apparently,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Go ahead and poke in. Well, yeah. What, you lay it out for us, like, brother.
Yeah. Come on. Well, I dropped the bag. Yeah. this game, we talked the other day about Oklahoma, Texas. Who needs that game more? This game has got incredible edge to it for both programs, I think. Who needs this win more? Jimbo is still fighting for his future, although his future is going to be very wealthy regardless. Saban only has so many years left. You don't want to give up a season, especially on the first weekend of October with two losses. Pat, who needs this one more as a program?
First of all, I will say this is a fascinating, like, three-team round robin that we've got going on between those two and Tennessee. Like, they're all playing each other in the next few weeks here, and they all have one loss. So this is a little elimination round robin from playoff chase, and probably from winning a division in the SEC. So it's interesting between those three, but as far as this particular game, this matchup, A&M needs it more. I know there are people that are like, you know, this, yes, how many times more times Coach Saban have? Well, he's already won seven, so, you know, if he doesn't win anymore, it's okay. I'm sure Alabama fans don't see it that way. I do. A&M, you've been trying and trying and trying and trying to get over the hump, and you haven't been able to really fully get there. So can you win the SEC West this year? You can look at this and say, yeah, why can't we? We've never won the SEC West. We've never played in Atlanta for the SEC championship. That's why we joined the league. That's what we aspired to do. And, oh, my God, here comes Texas, and Texas looks good next year. We got to score now. We got to make hay. We got to strike while the iron is hot, hit that oil gusher. So I think this is a bigger game at home for the program and for Jimbo both. Jimbo very much needs to win the game.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this is a hill that, you know, A&M hasn't quite gotten over. And of all the years, it kind of reminds me of the Ole Miss talking points ahead of the Ole Miss game. It was like, this is the year, right? And you even saw the post-game comments from Ole Miss players in Lane Kiffin about this was the year. Like, we they were vulnerable. We needed to get them this year. A&M's got to be thinking the same thing, right? This is the year. They're vulnerable. We got to get them this year. So they're at home. They're only like now like a 1 or 2 point underdog, I believe. The spread has like plummeted down to almost a pick 'em or something. So, you know, I think the pressure, and then obviously with Jimbo and his contract and that whole situation, former boss. I mean, all those things. This seems like, when you think of what program needs it more, it would feel like A&M. Now you could argue the other side, because there's only been probably two, maybe three seasons since Nick Saban's first year, not counting his first year, that Alabama's lost multiple regular season games. It hasn't happened very much. And they lost to Texas so early in the season that every game now seems like, oh, they gotta win it or the dynasty is gone and crumbling. Like the Ole Miss game felt like that, and this one does too.
Best I can tell, 2019, they lost twice in the regular season, but LSU and Auburn.
Yeah.
Auburn. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was at the end. Everything else, the second loss is coming.
2010 was, so they lost at least twice.
They lost three games in 2000. I mean, we're going back to 2010.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything else is one or two losses, but the loss was either SEC championship game, Auburn, to be out of it. That's, I'll bring up the Alabama point just because I agree with all of what you guys are saying. I think this is the year they got a new quarterback injury and stuff. But if you're A&M, you're like, I got these guys at home. This the SEC West is open. Texas has come. All those points, I totally agree. So I'll make it the Alabama side, even though I kind of agree with A&M. But man, two losses at they haven't dealt with that in so long. I remember there was a great line in that Dan Jenkins, the great college football writer for Sports Illustrated from the 70s, 80s, and all that. I remember he had this great line in one of his books or stories that he turned into a book. And he had something like, there's nothing like the depression of, I think he was using Notre Dame at the time, but of the big football campus after an early loss or like, right. It's like the campus is just dead. It's like they just suck the whole wind out of it. And you have Alabama. I mean, so many kids go there because of football. The place is built around football. It's a good university and all that. I'm not saying it isn't, but the biggest building on campus is Bryant Denny Stadium. It's right there. It like dwarfs the president's mansion and everything's this football rah-rah culture. And it's like, holy crap, it's October 6th. We got two losses.
Yeah. We're not going to the playoff. And we already know we're not going to the playoff.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. That to me would be a shock to the system for Alabama. Now, do I think they'll be back next year as a program? No, I don't. I don't think they're going to. They've got a great quarterback coming in. Nick Saban will do what he can to fix, but castles crumble, right? Lane pointed out. This is a really, really interesting football game on Saturday. Now we're going to pick the major games. We've talked some of the major games. I wanted to run this thing by you guys before this podcast goes completely off the rails, because we have an update on the nut pulling up in OKC back in 2007. And I mean, we got Fat Bear Week. We got a lot.
We got stuff.
What games this weekend that are a little under the radar, we like to spread out who we talk about, are you very interested in seeing? What game that, okay, it's not, everyone's going to be watching Red River, fine. What's the other game you might be interested in? Pat, do you have any?
I've got a real off the wall one.
Okay.
Friday night. Two not very good teams, but which one season's really going to hell in a handbasket and which one can be salvaged? Nebraska at Illinois. Friday night, two struggling Big Ten West teams. Brett Bielema has made his mark partially as, you know, at Illinois by beating Nebraska twice. He beat Scott Frost twice, including in his first game there. And everybody's like, oh, Big Brett's got it going. And meanwhile, what the hell is wrong with Nebraska? If he beats them a third time, they've at least got some hope. Hey, we can get to a bowl game. Nebraska, the first season under Matt Rule, will be an unadulterated mess. It's already gotten bad. They mismanaged their quarterback situation. Their offense is awful. The only three schools in the country that have thrown the ball fewer times on first down than Nebraska are the service academies, who never throw the ball. They're the most predictable, stereotypical offense in the country. They've got to do something, figure something out, because a fan base is extremely ardent, but they're not giving them much to hang on to right now.
If you've followed the Arkansas-Ole Miss game through the years, you know that it is insane, and things seem to happen in a rise in that game. They play this weekend in Oxford. It's a night kickoff. You know, it's kind of been back and forth the last, like, probably 10, 12 years. It's been, like, even, the game. I mean, Ole Miss has won, like, six. Arkansas has won six or seven. The last 12 or 13 years, it's been really even. It's been crazy at times. You remember years ago, this was like the first seven overtime game. Like, I mean, 20 years ago now, where it was 58-56, Arkansas won that seven overtime game. They've went to overtime a few years back, scored in the 50s. Game's usually a shootout. It's usually just wild, and it's usually really close. It's an amazing series that kind of gets overshadowed. So that is certainly one to watch in Oxford. No matter what, it's probably going to be a typical somewhat close shootout of a game.
I'll give you one. Purdue at Iowa. Iowa's 4-1.
Dan, what are you doing?
I can't say anything negative about Purdue. I'm on probation. Purdue probation after claiming
it. I can't believe you, of all people, are actually trying to turn around and make nice with someone. Usually you just double down on the antagonism.
It was such a bad pick, picking Illinois to beat Purdue. But to your point earlier, the Big Ten West absolutely sucks. Okay.
It's terrible.
Iowa is 4-1. We can make fun of Brian Ferentz all we want. Everyone, they turn this thing into a circus. Everyone can bring this stuff up, the deep fakes online, all the different stuff. It's become this thing. Iowa, I'm not going to say they're going to beat Purdue because I can't, right? So I'm making nice Purdue. But if they were to win the game, this schedule, like, they could go 11-1. this year and not average 25 points. Listen to this schedule. Beat Purdue.
Yeah, it's easy.
They got at Wisconsin. All right, let's say they lose. That's their 50. I don't know how good Wisconsin is. I don't know.
That's, yeah.
Then they got Minnesota, Northwestern, Rutgers. They got at Minnesota at home, at Northwestern, Rutgers, Illinois at home, at Nebraska. This is a 10-2, 11-1 football team. They're not going to fire the guy. He's going to be in Indianapolis, and like Michigan, Iowa State, Penn State's going to score 60 on him. But it's like the Big Ten West is so freaking bad that Iowa, the national punchline, could legitimately end up 11-1. You want to know why they're expanding? It's because these programs, with all of their money that Ohio State and Michigan made them, all of their big conference, power conference privilege, all of their, what do they call it? What are they? The investment five. What do they call these things, Ross?
Oh, yeah.
They've given, you know, they really invest. Mm-hmm. They all suck. How is the Big Ten West this bad? That the league, Fox and NBC and everyone sat there and said, we got to go get some teams from California and Pacific Northwest, because you guys can't get your crap together and be good or interesting at all. So Iowa wins this game. I'm starting to get fascinated by Iowa. Like the sweet corn just comes in this time of year. Hawkeyes.
They are playing their backup quarterback.
I know.
McNamara's out.
Who cares?
Well,
don't score any points before.
No, I know.
I don't know. That we will see. Can they beat Purdue? Purdue is, if they can beat Purdue, they can beat pretty much everyone else on the schedule. If they can't, then maybe it doesn't go this way. But can you imagine Iowa averaging 20, Brian Ferentz not hitting the number, and they're sitting at 11-1 going to Indy, and like the BCS the playoff committee will rank them like sixth or something anyway. They can't. They get so the bobble of the. Oh, 11-1, 11-1. I gotta rank them out. Yeah, okay.
They got a good record there in the Big Ten. That's all that matters.
Good defense, game control. They got game punting is winning. We've got a new game metric. Control. We've got a new metric. Punting is winning. Anyway,
that's right.
All right, that is that. You got another? Anyone else got another game? I have more than one. I'm excited about this weekend. All right, I will go. I'll snake draft it.
Okay.
Fresno 5-0, heading to 4-1. Wyoming, 7,220 feet up there. This Wyoming crowd that turned out for the Texas Tech game, do they come back? Do the ranchers come on? Do they ride their horses into Laramie? Can we get this going? Fascinating game. 8 o'clock game is on Fox. It's a national TV game on Fox. 8 o'clock.
That is going to be good. And if Fresno wins that, I think they have a shot at running the table here in the regular season. Do they not?
Absolutely.
Remember. Yeah.
This is going to be a good game. Fresno.
And they still might not be the best team in that league. Air Force, baby. Air Force.
I think it's going to be a heck of a game. I mean, Fresno turned my head. I know Arizona State is horrible, but they went to Arizona State and won 29-0. Yep. Like, you just don't, group of fives don't go to power five and shut them out like that. And I grant you it's Arizona State, but they scored 28 on USC. Too, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they beat Purdue, too. But I'm not saying anything about that. I'm not mentioning Purdue. That was just bad refs or something.
Beat
it was
the
like
drum.
A bad call. There was probably something like that.
I'm sorry. I am just unnerved by this sudden turn of pro Purdue from you. This is really.
I felt that my negativity to Purdue somehow influenced, because I'm not really negative Purdue. It's a great place. I don't know. I'm trying something new out, Pat. I'm trying growth. I'm trying personal
personal growth. Okay.
We didn't mention personal growth in the preview part. Anyway, no. You guys got a second game, or are you just all about the big schools?
Yeah. That's it. No, I got a second.
All right, go ahead.
Washington State at UCLA. Wazoo has looked really for real so far. Some good wins. They beat Oregon State. They beat Wisconsin. Cam Ward has been awesome at quarterback. Jake Dickert, rising star when he's not picking on Lee Corso, erroneously. but go on the road into the Rose Bowl. The atmosphere isn't going to be that tough, but UCLA is pretty darn good. Defense has gotten a lot better for Chip Kelly. We'll see what Dante Moore brings to the table. Should be a very exciting quarterback showdown there. I'm looking forward to that one.
Ross, you got an interesting game?
Yeah. How about Coach Prime? Talked a lot about Deion Sanders on the show. They've lost two straight after winning the first three, and they go to Arizona State, 1-4. But the Sun Devils have, they played pretty well against USC. I mean, it was kind of down in the fourth quarter of a game. And at times this year, they've shown a little life under Kenny Dillingham, despite losing starting quarterback. So does Coach Prime and the Buffaloes lose a third game? Do we see Arizona State pull off an upset? Colorado's 4.5-point favorite. So this feels like a big game for the Coach Prime train. After back-to-back losses in games that they were expected to lose, this one they're expected to win, but they're on the road against a team that's pretty scrappy. So look out.
All right, I'm going to give you another one. K-State at Oklahoma State Friday night. Wildcats, every man a Wildcat, 11.5-point favorites. Mike Gundy's program is reeling. Amazing. 2 years ago, they beat the – did they beat Oklahoma in that game and then send Lincoln Riley, or Lincoln Riley? Can't even remember now.
They beat Oklahoma.
Then they beat Notre Dame.
And in between, they lost at that unbelievable Baylor goal line stand in the Big 12 championship game.
Program was humming 2 years ago. It's not humming anymore. 2-2. They got blown out by South Alabama, which isn't even really a good Group of Five game team. Lost right. at Iowa State. They've beaten Arizona State. Arizona State is coming back as the beatdown team. It's like during the NFL draft when they start like they're showing highlights and it's always like the Vanderbilt, like kids running by Vanderbilt's defense or something. They beat Central Arkansas 27-13. I don't know where Gundy's program is right now, and I don't know what Oklahoma State does about it. They owe him $25.8 million if they buy him out. And unlike other coaching deals, the buyout goes up every year.
What?
Yeah, he gets 75% of his total remaining salary. He has an automatic one-year rollover every year. And he gets a $125,000 raise every year as a minimum. So every year he gets 125K raise and the contract extends on the rollout. It's a 5-year rollout and they owe him 75% of the salary. It's a complete lopsided deal. It's not like, hey, every year you're cutting back and there's no, if there's an offset, I don't know if there is, he's not going like, so they owe him more every year they keep him and T-Boone isn't around anymore.
Right.
Goodness, I don't know. They want to fire him. I mean, but again, 2 years ago, you're rolling. Right now, you're not rolling. This is a big game. You get blown out by K-State at home. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. I do question how much his heart's really in it these days. I mean, because last year they were bad and they fell apart at the end and then everybody transferred. And, you know, we know Mike Gundy. I'm not sure he's necessarily built for the NIL collective transfer world. And we'll see how long he really wants to do this.
All right. If anyone else got a game, hit it up. Otherwise,
I thought we were picking this game, and we're not. I just looked at Sean's game. Let's Notre Dame Louisville. It's a good game here in my town. I'm going to it Saturday night, and I'm kind of mad because the good games are clustered at noon and at like 7:30 instead of anything really in the middle window. But this is a fascinating one to me. Notre Dame has been living on the edge. Third straight week, Notre Dame has played an undefeated team. Second straight week, they've done it on the road. They haven't beaten ranked teams back-to-back on the road since, I believe it was 2005. Might have been Charlie Weiss's first year. So we'll see how they do against the Louisville team that I think Louisville's kind of played a little over its head. They're a big splash play offense. Brohm has got a Brohm offense going. They have got a pretty good defense. I don't know about the offensive line holding up here, and we'll see. Just I think Notre Dame's physicality might be too much for them, but it should be a great atmosphere at L&N Stadium, as I guess they call it now.
I was trying to find what would be the last pick of the draft in games this week. I think I found it.
Okay, here.
I think I found
Let's do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm pretty sure this is going to be the last pick. This is Mr. Irrelevant of the weekend. All right. Ball State at Eastern Michigan. 3:30 p.m. Saturday, baby. EMU, 2.5-point favorite. You know,
no love for the factory with the gray turf? Come on, man.
1-4. Ball State's 1-4. Eastern Michigan is 2-3. So,
season on the break.
Otherwise,
here.
I don't know anything else about these teams, but there you go.
The factory.
The
gray turf.
The gray turf, and they call their place the factory. Although, don't they argue with someone else that's called the factory?
I don't know.
I thought there were like two could schools be. That had a factory.
It could it very know. Well.
It's very Michigan. It's very Michigan. Let's call it the factory. Yeah. I don't know. I would say that you're just disrespecting the Maction. On that, but hey, what do I know? All right, update on the we were talking Red River Shootout. Why you can't call it that anymore because it just got too violent. This was no gunplay was involved in this. We brought up a an old story of a bar fight in Oklahoma City. We have more info on it, and we thank our listener Michael Milligan who literally went to the bar and took a picture. Of the spot great. Where the fight
boots on the ground reporting.
Yeah. Fantastic. Fantastic pod correspondent.
Great work. You're our listener of the week. And then he also sent us an updated story. This is from November 19, 2008. Charges were dropped in the bar fight. And it turns out the guy who kind of, if you recall, there was a fight and someone tried to rip somebody's
stuff off,
his onions off. And it took out 60 stitches and all of that. It was ugly. This is how tense it gets. A little more perspective here. Oklahoma prosecutors plan to drop an assault charge against an Oklahoma Sooner fan accused of nearly castrating a Longhorn fan during a bar fight last year. Brian Thomas testified he received more than 60 stitches and is still in pain, although there was no permanent damage. So we're happy with that. What happened was a 54-year-old guy named Alan Michael Beckett, a federal auditor and church deacon.
Church deacon. Come on. Wait a minute.
Contends he was defending himself during an altercation with Thomas on June 17th at the Henry Hudson Pub in Oklahoma City. Authorities allege that Beckett tore Thomas's scrotum after Beckett taunted Thomas for wearing a University of Texas shirt in an establishment frequented by Sooner devotees. So the 35-year-old, originally, Thomas is 35, Beckett's the old deacon, the church deacon. He says he got attacked without provocation, but then the other people at the bar, additional witnesses who were there with Thomas, came forward and basically said Thomas maybe brought it on. I don't know. Charges were dropped. So that's the issue. We thought it was a bad story. We thought it was a violent, ridiculous story. I didn't have church deacon on my my scrotum tugging OKC bar fight bingo card, but maybe I should have. Probably like one out of every three guys in Oklahoma is a church deacon, right?
Yeah, it's possible.
So that's our update. Does it change your opinion of anything here, Pat?
No. Still a horrific injury that I get squeamish thinking about and hearing about every time. I that's got to be the quickest way to end a fight, like as far as a fair fight, right? You just grab somebody there and it's like, what do? You can't fight back other than just, please God, get me out of here.
Well, the guy he didn't realize that it had happened until after the fight, apparently. But anyway, still famous.
I think I would realize quickly.
It was right by the bar. It was not a corner. It was right in the bar. So,
yeah.
According to this picture. So, anyway.
Michael Milligan, or I believe his name.
There's no plaque. They should have
put a plaque up. Come on. What's it called? Henry Hudson? Henry Hudson's. Put a plaque up, would you? We're still talking about this thing 16 years later.
They should really rename the bar.
They have like Rocky Mountain Oysters on there or something like that. Yeah. Anyway, Oklahoma and Texas fans, we implore you, don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't do that.
We know you're going to get it's going to get a little rowdy. It's going to be some words exchanged. Sometimes you got to throw some hands or something like that. I get it, but let's lay off that, okay? We're encouraging a peaceful Red River shootout. Tensions are high.
Let's not even say sometimes you got to throw
don't
hands.
Throw hands.
Don't throw hands.
Okay, just work it out. Go to the Midway. Get yourself a deep fried fireball.
Deep fried sushi.
Yeah, deep fried sushi. All right. Another incident. James Kerpea of Oregonian, longtime listener, friend of ours, great reporter.
Friend of the pod.
Has a story that couldn't be more us. A guy named Jeremy Jackson, a sophomore at Oregon, showed up at the game against Colorado last month with his emotional support duck. His name is Quacktavious. He brought the pet to Autzen Stadium. Ross, you were there. I don't know why you didn't see this. What kind of reporting were you doing?
I know. I know. I'm disappointed. I didn't see the duck amid the 55,000 below.
Yeah, it's officially registered as an emotional support animal. It is an emotional support duck. Brought Quacktavious to the game. And he goes, I had him in his carrier. Once I got inside, I was just walking around with him. I thought someone was going to say something, but no one did. As the game went on, eventually someone did walk up to me, and I just they asked me how I got the duck in. I just walked in with them. So I guess he just walked in with a duck. Wasn't trying to hide anything. Eventually the sheriff came and said, you can stay, but you got to let the duck go. And he's like, this is my emotional support duck. I'm not just going to let him fly away. The duck became a huge thing in the crowd. Everyone was cheering for the duck, keep the duck and all of that. And it's now up to the Oregon Athletic Department whether or not the police have said, we're not going to step in if Oregon says you can bring your emotional support duck, Quactavius, it's fine. If not, you're banned from the Quactavius is banned from the stadium. There's even a picture of Jeremy Jackson with Bo Nix. I mean, it's become a big thing out there. People's Court, Pat, should Quactavius be allowed inside Outzen Stadium as a symbol of emotional support and the fact he's a duck?
I will say this. I like the name Quactavius. I think that's very good. Kudos there. No, keep your duck home. I don't care if it's the Oregon Ducks. Keep your duck home. Your duck does not belong at the football game. You can make it through 3 hours of the football game without the emotional support of your duck. Keep your duck off the airplane as well. If they let in the duck, guess what happens in Eugene, Oregon? 12,000 dogs then come in the stadium next week. Because that's Dog Central, and they will all have their labs running around. Yeah. It's going to be chaos. They're going to be taking dumps all over the concourses. No animals at the game, period.
New rule. I stole this from our fellow writer, Ralph Russo. New rule. You can bring in to stadiums emotional support animals as long as they are the mascot of your team. There you go.
What happens with Colorado?
LSU? Bring in the tiger.
Yeah, Colorado.
You got a tiger? Bring them all in.
No, right? No.
Florida, you got a gator? Bring them in. No. There you go. It works. No. Perfect, right?
No.
Nothing wrong with that at all.
No.
So also, by the way, James Crippy messaged me last night about this. He said, invariably, when this topic comes up on the pod, which he was right, of course, we're going to talk about it. He said, make sure to tell everybody that during the half an hour long interview he had with the student, the duck was in the background quacking.
Perfect. Jackson's very zen about this duck. It's like any regular animal. When I'm at school or wherever I may be, I have an automatic water and feeding for him. It's more simple than I think. The whole following me thing, I think people are like, dude, how do you train him to follow you? I didn't. He did that himself. He just loves Jackson. I would just put him on the ground one day and he started following me. A lot of people ask me, aren't you scared he's going to fly away? No, he doesn't. He just does his thing. He can fly. He's flown before, but he doesn't leave my side. It's a love story. This is a boy and his duck. Don't ducks crap all over the place? Like, I think you got to.
They do crap. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the other. And then how many
ducks drove with the duck in the area? Yeah.
You know, he's a former Mississippi State student, so he had the duck. In fact, if you go to the Ducks Instagram.
Yeah, Quactavius has his own Instagram page, of course.
Yeah, you could see he's got pictures of the duck on the Mississippi State campus with, like, with people there and Bully, the bronze Bully statue, and there's the duck. It's next to the bronze Bully statue. But he drove from Starkville, Mississippi, to Eugene, Oregon, with the duck. So I don't know what his car looks like, but ducks do
duck situation. I don't know how you're pulling this off. I tread lightly, ducks. Dan Lanning, tread lightly. You're 5-0. Things are rolling. Do not want the curse of Quactavius.
I'd risk the curse of Quactavius.
Risk it. All right. Before we get to the games, Fat Bear Week is upon us. Time to make our selections. I believe that we should continue to have a keeper league here.
Keeper league? No.
Yes.
747.
Yes.
No, you don't get to just make up the rules willy-nilly here. No, we've never had a keeper league in anything like this before.
I identified 747 years ago. That is my bear. 747 is my bear. If you don't know about Fat Bear Week, It's now quite popular. We were early adapters. We were influencers on this.
Very early.
This is
at least like 4 or 5. This is 4 or 5 years of Fat Bear.
Started in 2014. We've been doing, I think maybe 5. Fat Bear Week for, I don't know what, maybe the old podcast. It's up at the Katmai National Park and Preserve in Alaska. The genius idea by the people up there. They take pictures of their bears and they try to measure which bear got fat, the most fat, to the fattest bear going into hibernation. They eat salmon, all this stuff. And so they have tournament style brackets going against each other. The brackets have been revealed, and there's Fat Bear Junior, all that. Anyway, I'm taking 747.
Oh my God. Yeah, unbelievable.
I mean, what, you can have Otis. Otis is a 4-time champ. A 4-time champ. Defeated 747 in 2021. And then somebody picked Holly, the woman.
Yeah, I think I've had Holly before.
Female bear. Hmm. Anyway, make your picks, but you take 747. You might have to head to Henry Hudson's. Just say, warning you. Might go Henry Hudson's bar on you.
Great.
Are you a church deacon? Go ahead. Make your picks.
All right. So, no, I'm not going to take 747. Just I'll let you go ahead and rig this for yourself. But here's the one thing. This does not count in Race for the Case. You've tried that trick before, too. This does not count in Race for the Case. I like the fact that we have a bear named Bucky Dent this year, but I don't like Bucky's shape. Not fat enough. Not enough cushion for the pushing in the back there. Not enough caboose. So I'm going with Electra. Ooh. Big old woman now. Big old woman.
Dirty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She could be your three technique or your nose tackle, and she would be very hard to move in the middle of a defensive line. So I will take Electra as my fat bear champion.
Okay.
I'm actually going to go. You just mentioned her. I'm going to go with Holly. I mean, she's got some girth, tree trunk sized legs. Look at this stomach. It looks like a barrel of beer. Give me Holly. Go, girl.
John?
Yeah, a lot of good bears here this year. Not gonna lie, a lot of the smaller bears aren't giving me. You know, maybe they develop in the weight room after. A lot of red shirt bears I'm seeing, but highly recruited. I like Chunk. I think that he's got a face that's looking for some problems when it comes to just really getting after it this winter. So I'll go with Chunk.
Nobody took Otis. Nobody took Otis. All right. That's fine. I'll take 747. We've got a bye. 747 is got a bye. It actually has a different name, but it's actually bear number 740. It just happened to be number of a massive airplane. But I am taking.
There's a bunch of bears that aren't named, and I don't like that. Like, if you're going to name some of them, name them all.
Yeah. 901 has been a threat in the past, right? Doesn't have a name. Yeah. There's room for improvement here. But anyway, I'm taking 747. Let's go. Fat Bear Week. We got this.
Okay.
Next Tuesday is the championship round. I fully expect my bear to be there. So there we are. All right. We got that down. Now let's pick some games. Actual football games. All right. Game of the week. Red River Shootout. Oklahoma ranked 12th. Texas ranked 3rd. Games at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas. Noon Eastern on ABC. Longhorns are giving 6.5. At
okay, just very briefly, I am taking the Longhorns, giving the points, but I wanted to revisit quickly my point that I made. And you guys erroneously said it means more to Texas. I said it means more to Oklahoma. Here's why. If you're Brent Venables, a little history lesson for you. Ooh. The only school that Oklahoma has played more than a dozen times that has a winning record against Oklahoma is Texas. I mean, Oklahoma's history is ridiculous. But Texas owns the rivalry, has beaten them 15 more times. One coach in Oklahoma history has started 2-0 against Texas. That's Barry Switzer. Bud Wilkinson didn't. Bob Stoops didn't. Lincoln Riley didn't. Benny Owen, who's the field, Owen Field is named after, did not. But Benny Owen did get the first victory in the history for Oklahoma, 2-0 in 1905. Texas says a crooked ref called the safety. Oklahoma fans stormed the field and threw chrysanthemums and canes and hats into the air. And the first game ever was in 1900. The coach was in his last year for Oklahoma named Vernon L. Parrington. He lost 28-2. He got out of coaching. He went on to win the Pulitzer Prize and become the father of American studies, big academic hero in America in the early 20th century. So Texas drove him to great heights just by beating his ass. So anyway, long story short, Texas wins and covers.
A history lesson with Professor so nice. 40.
There you go.
I'm Two actually taking Texas. Texas with the points as well. Was calling around some coaches this week about this game, kind of getting a coach's perspective, and they all basically said the same thing. Texas's lines are just so much better. Offensive line and defensive line. Texas looks like, you hear a lot of the Texas looks like an SEC team sort of thing. So, give me the Longhorns to cover the 6.5.
John?
Yeah, I like Texas in this game for sure. Like them to cover. It was a beatdown last year. I know there's no Dylan Gabriel on Oklahoma, but 49-0. I'm not sure if his sole return to the team brings that into a much tighter game. So I'll go Texas to cover.
So I listened last night to my Sooner, deep Sooner propaganda. Mm. And convince me. I'm going lone Sooner on this. I'll take it. Mm. This is going to be an extremely physical football game. May not be too zip. But one thing Oklahoma can do is tackle. They're in like top five in the country in fewest missed tackles. Their linebackers are athletic. There was a million yards after carry against Kansas for yards after contact for Texas against Kansas. I think this is going to be an extremely tight, defensive, physical game. We are not in this is not Texas-Oklahoma of 4 years ago or, 50-48, that type of stuff. We're heading back to Pat's guy.
Yeah, and Benny Owen, baby.
Benny Owen. I think it's good. Benny Owen. And they got the field, right? So we got the field.
Yeah.
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 Or the stadium. Give me
just the field.
If Oklahoma has allowed three scores in the second half this entire season, two field goals and a touchdown, I know they have not played. My hesitation is they haven't played the schedule that Texas has. I think this is going to be a tight game. And if you're going to give me 6.5 in a game that I think is going to be tight, I'm going to take it. I will go lone Sooner on this. Next one, number 23 LSU at number 21 Missouri. LSU. Giving 5.5, game is at noon on ESPN. Ross.
God, who would have thought before the season that LSU would have only been a 5.5-point favorite at Missouri? I think many people thought, by this time Missouri would be 2-3 or have at least a couple losses, and Eli Drinkwitz would be very much on the hot seat. And LSU, by this point, by many projections, would be undefeated in 5-0. And so here we sit. It's Missouri 5-0, LSU 3-2. I'm gonna say that the Tigers, the visiting Tigers, go in there and cover the 5.5. I am not at all confident in the pick. LSU brought in longtime defensive line coach Pete Jenkins to repair the front there because they have been getting pretty much run through lately, especially against the Rebels, gave up more yards. And LSU team has never given up more yards than it did in I think 700-plus to Ole Miss. So I'm going to say they do just enough and cover the spread and go get a much-needed victory.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a little bit of a shootout. I just don't see Missouri being able to contain Jaden Daniels. And I do think, I think Luther Burden and Theo Weiss could have a big day against the LSU secondary, which is awful. So I think points back and forth, but I'm going to say Tigers Bayou version, more explosive, win and cover on the road. Missouri, just you look at them statistically, you're like, what exactly are they good at? And there just isn't enough there to hang your hat on. So I'm going to say Tigers Bayou version over Tigers Midwest version, win and cover.
Yeah, I already think that Brian Kelly is uncomfortable having two losses this early, and he does not want to fall to three. I'll go with LSU to cover in a must-win for the season, a must-win for next season for the Tigers.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm taking LSU. All they got to do is be a little bit better defensively, and they should be able to win this game. Jaden, I love Jaden Daniels, you know that. And he is not the problem. He's going to have a big game. But all they got to do is be a little better defensively, and that should happen. Maryland, unranked, at number four, Ohio State. Maryland is unbeaten, though. We talked about, earlier this week, talked about LSU and Missouri on the Tuesday show. I just talked a lot of Maryland, Ohio State. Buckeyes are giving 20. Game is at noon on Fox. Ohio State, 20-point favorites over Maryland. Pat.
Give me the Terps and the points there. I think that's a big number, and I think Maryland is evolving into a just more solid all-around program the longer they've gone under Mike Locksley. Talia Tongavailoa is really good, and they can throw it, but they can also run it well enough, and their defense has gotten better and better. And so, you know, I think I wouldn't be shocked if Ohio State, they had a week off, which probably helps them heal up after the Notre Dame game. But they've got to have eyes on the prizes that are still to come. Penn State coming to Columbus later this month. And then obviously we know what happens in Ann Arbor at the end of the year. I don't see them being at a fever pitch for this game. And I do see Maryland being at a fever pitch. So I think Maryland does enough to cover. It might be 14-point game, might be 17, but I'm taking the Terps and the points.
Same. 20 points is a lot. And if you look at Ohio State's schedule, they played two Power 5 teams, Indiana in Notre Dame. Indiana, they scored 23 points against Indiana, and against Notre Dame, they scored 17 and had 10 points up into the last second. So I think that there's been some struggles on offense, and Locks and Maryland will do enough to hold the Buckeyes. I don't know that they'll win, but to hold the Buckeyes to cover that spread.
Yeah, the 6-5 2022 Maryland team only lost by 13 to the C.J. Stroud-led Ohio State Buckeyes. So I think with another year under Talia's belt and Kyle McCord not exactly being C.J. Stroud, Maryland covers this game.
Yeah, I think backdoor cover, late surge, just too many points. I'm with all you guys. Maryland 38, 38, 42, 31, 44 is what they've done. They can score points. And I don't know Ohio State's going to be able to put up 50 on them or anything like that. So I will take Maryland to cover as well. I would take Ohio State to win the game. Number 11, Alabama at Texas A&M. Bama is a 1.5-point favorite. Game is 3:30 on CBS. Aggies home dog by 1.5. Ross?
Oh. I've been going back and forth on this one all week. I don't know what to do, but when in doubt, bet with Coach Saban, I guess. Give me Alabama. Again, don't feel real good about it. I think A&M is really talented. Obviously, they've been playing well lately. Defensively, they've been playing pretty solid lately. This just feels like it's going to come down to the final play. And when in doubt, go with the man.
Yep, I'm doing the same. And Max Johnson is a good backup for Texas A&M, yeah. But he still was the backup. And Connor Wegman being out, I think will probably be exposed a little bit by a very good Alabama defense. So I think the Tide stave off their demise for another week and win in College Station, cover the spread.
I think this game's going to be a mess. Good amount of turnovers, good amount of chaos, and I will take a flyer on it being the year. Let's see if Jimbo can really do it. So I'll take Texas A&M to cover.
I don't like Connor Wegman being out. my hesitation here is, what does Jalen Milroe do under the hostility? I know they went to Mississippi State last week and won, and he looked pretty good. He looked competent. Mississippi State and their cowbells could be an intimidating place to play. It's not College Station, though. Can he handle that? That's the next development. But I'm going to take Alabama in this game. The Ole Miss game shocked me back into reality. Don't be chasing these upsets when it comes to Nick Saban. There's a reason he's Nick Saban. So I will take Alabama here. That's not a lot of points. Number 20, Kentucky, unbeaten. At number 1, Georgia, unbeaten. The Dogs giving 15. Game is at 7 on ESPN. 15 against a undefeated number 20 team. Pat, I think we're back to you.
Yeah, that's too much. I'm taking Kentucky to cover. I assume Georgia will raise its pretty half-assed standard of play so far and play better than they have here for this game. But if they don't, they could flat out lose. As it is, I think it's going to be a struggle. Kentucky, boy, Ray Davis running the ball with great authority for Kentucky. They really even haven't had needed Devin Leary to be a superhero by any stretch. Georgia slow starts, offense iffy, you know, too many mistakes. So enough factors that can go into this to let Kentucky hang around, as they have been wont to do against Georgia. They really haven't been like run off the field by the Dogs here in the last couple of years. So I'm going to take Kentucky in the points there.
Yeah, I think this, in a way, this feels like the game that, right, Georgia like comes to life and gets going. This was, you know, I think it was last year. It felt like right around the time, 5 or 6 games in, where they really kind of hit the gas. And this is a lot of points. Yeah, like 14.5 is a lot for a Kentucky team that kind of like, you know, possesses the ball on offense, hogs the ball, and plays really good defense. However, like I'm going to go back to my first statement. I think this is the game that kind of Georgia maybe turns it on. If there's any defense that's going to slow what Kentucky does best, you know, with Ray Davis and running the football, it is Kirby Smart and crew. So give me Georgia at home to cover it.
Yeah, last week, Devin Leary only had 20 attempts and 9 completions. If I'm Georgia and I'm in that room, I'm saying we're going to make him throw the ball, and I don't foresee him beating them or putting up a ton of points all on his own. I think Georgia stunts the run game, and they cover the 15.
Literally, as I'm looking at this, the spread, yeah, dropped to 14.5, and Georgia's money line went from minus 500 to minus 600. So, I don't know. I got the live BetMGM odds here on Yahoo Sports. I'm taking Georgia. I think they're going to be able to stop Ray Davis. Also, first real road game for Kentucky. A lot of times teams struggle in the first real road game. No offense to Vanderbilt, but that ain't between the hedges. Although they may have a hedge there. I don't know. Everyone's got hedges now. Kind of took everyone.
Yeah, Vandy's doing a bunch of construction. I don't think they've got hardly
anything. Yeah, I don't know what they got. All right. Lock of the week. Anyone have a pick?
I do.
Okay, Pat. Good work.
I'm going to take the Buffaloes, Colorado, to cover a fairly small spread. Four and a half
right now.
In Tempe. All right, 4.5 in Tempe. Colorado's a better team. They've come through a bit of a gauntlet, but I think they may be getting back Travis Hunter, may get back Shiloh Sanders, which will dramatically help their secondary, and Travis Hunter will help their offense too. Omarion Miller, freshman receiver, blew up out of nowhere. First, he hadn't caught a college pass. 7 for 196 against USC. So another weapon for Shedeur Sanders to throw to. They just got way more weaponry than Arizona State does. So I like the Buffs to win in Sun Devil Stadium. Win and cover the 4.5.
I talked about this game earlier. Arkansas, Ole Miss. Ole Miss, 11.5 point. Yeah, 11.5 point favorite at home. It's again, this game seems always close, and Arkansas always hangs around and gives Ole Miss trouble. And I think that happens again. So give me the Hogs to cover the 11.5 in Oxford.
I'll go with Old Reliable this year and stick in the ACC. UNC giving 8.5 points to Syracuse still seems pretty low. UNC has a better quarterback and a better offense. So I'll just go with a nice meat and potatoes, keep it simple, Tar Heels cover versus the Orange.
I'm going to take my first two picks were taken. So I'm on my third one here. This is how I end up. This is why I take the harder route. That's why I take the harder route to winning Race for the Case by picking last. Yeah. I am going to take Rutgers to cover at Wisconsin. Rutgers is getting
I like that pick.
13.5 points in an over-under of 44-5. It is slow. They are going to run the ball. Both teams are going to run the ball. I don't think there's going to be they'll pass more at Wisconsin, but it's not the old Wisconsin. But I don't think there's going to be a million plays in this. I don't think it's going to be a shootout. And I think Rutgers showed enough through this year. They actually played Michigan decent for the first half before getting kind of doused late. Had a nice tune-up week against Wagner. I think they go out to Camp Randall, keep it close. If I'm getting 13.5, I will take Rutgers they're 4-1. They've been pretty good. Maybe not win, but I don't have to win. So I will take Rutgers over Wisconsin as my lock of the week. How about that? We made it through. Probably ran long. Probably only did some of the parts that I predicted at the beginning of the show. Whatever. We did it. We'll be back probably late Sunday night. Show will drop, if not for your commute on Monday morning, as always, to overreact to everything we saw. Hope everyone enjoys a great college football weekend. Great games from noon to late night. Keep subscribing. Share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. We will talk to you later.